This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. And in this first week of 2016, many of us are reflecting on the good and the bad of the past year and what resolutions we have for the coming months. For poet Maureen Shirbandi, meditating on change is an important and ongoing process, and one that served as an inspiration for her latest collection of poetry. In The Art of Departure, she examines the many ways we deal with losses like death, divorce, or children leaving home, and she considers how people have come to terms with their new lives after drastic change. Maureen Shirbandi will be reading from this collection at McIntyre's Books in Pittsburgh on January 24th at 2 o'clock. But first, she joins me in the studio. Maureen, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Although this poem is a collection of some new years and older years that were not always so happy.
Yes, that's correct. I went through sort of a dark period over 2 years where I experienced various deaths and a divorce after 21 long years of marriage. And at the time, I was also finishing grad school. So a lot of changes were going on at one time, and I was trying to navigate my new world in the midst of all these terrible losses.
Was the act of poetry sort of coming to mind for you as a way of processing or not? I mean, in some ways, you could be in paralysis when all this happened.
Right. I kind of felt numb. I know there are typical stages of loss. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's 5 stages of grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, and I think I went directly to numbness. So once I got past the numbness, which lasted for quite some time, I then was able to write about what I was going through, and that's always very therapeutic for me. And I think, though, with my divorce, I actually hit the stages of grief, denial, and then numbness.
It's interesting to think about the fact that you went back over that period after you'd been more or less, I mean, you'd worked through some of it. Do you wonder sort of what would have come out of you if you had actually been able to type, create poetry in those moments? And would it have been much different? How do you recreate or get back into those times that were so difficult?
I did write during that time somewhat because I am always writing, but I didn't put the pieces together until much later. And when you're in the midst of grief and loss, it's kind of hard to see the big picture. Right. And it's hard to see that you're going to move forward in any positive way. It just seems like you keep walking backwards.
Well, the book is, the volume is called The Art of Departure. Will you read the title poem for us?
Yes. The Art of Departure. There is an art to departure. Wear a grin on your face. Chin up. Shoulders back. Walk slowly. Memorize the house, the walls, the faces. Turn the knob, meander out, as if you'll be back later, as if you're just wandering up the driveway to gather another day's delivered mail.
Poet Maureen Shirbandi reading the title poem from her latest collection, The Art of Departure. She's going to be reading at McIntyre's later this month with me today. So there's a poem that I think shows both grace and restraint and one of those stages of grief, denial, all kind of packed into that that little poem.
Yeah. It was hard to write because it was hard to leave.
Yeah.
It took me 5 years to leave. I'm a very loyal person, and I'm slow to accept change. I don't really like change very much. But after 5 years of being pretty unhappy, I made myself leave. And turning that knob and walking out of a house, that was probably the hardest thing I've ever done.
But talk about that blend of sort of grace and denial. I mean, the importance of it in some ways in making the change, in being able to move on, faking it, denying it for a certain amount of time to get you to a point where you can actually come to terms.
Well, one of the reasons I did stay for so long was because I have 3 children.
Yeah.
And I actually left the day after my youngest son graduated from high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that I should stay for my children. But what I realize now is it's important for them to see happy parents and a happy mother. And I know why I stayed, but in retrospect, perhaps I should have left sooner.
How did writing the poem change things? Did the poem itself or writing the poem change the way you understood your own situation?
It did, because I didn't understand what the point of having all of these losses torpedoed at me at once was all about. Within 2 years, I lost my my father. Then I lost my infant nephew, my brother's son, who was a twin, lived for 5 days and then passed. And that was really, really sad. And my aunt died. And I was going through this divorce. And that's a lot to deal with at once. And I'm always questioning what is the learning experience here that I'm going to gain from it. I think we gain wisdom. We gain maturity. We gain empathy for others who are going through this. Because if you talk to people, you'll find that everyone suffers terrible losses at one moment in their life, if not several moments. And I think it has taught me to be a kinder, more empathetic person. And it has taught me that it's okay to reinvent yourself again and again, and it will be okay tomorrow. And I'm learning how to maneuver myself through a world that is very different than it was yesterday.
I wonder if you also reinvented yourself as a poet. Maybe that's too strong a word, but this is far more personal volume than your previous two books.
Right. In the book, Beyond Fairy Tales, Tales in Concrete, those poems were a little bit more remote because the voice was spoken through the different characters from fairy tales. And this one is very confessional, very personal. But I think what happens is people relate to it because we all suffer losses. It's a universal concept. When I gave a reading on Sunday at the Joyful Jewel in Pittsburgh, I got a very good response from the audience. People sent me personal emails afterwards and shared their stories in a one-on-one way. So I think it connects to everyone. Lots of people go through divorce and different losses. And I think that it helps them to hear that I survived it and I'm doing okay and they will too.
There's a lot of humor in these poems as well. Maybe I could get you to read This Place We Are At in Our Marriage.
Okay. So I grew up in New Jersey and I've always wanted to write a poem about Newark.
haven't we all?
I thought, one day I'm going to write a poem about Newark. So Newark is where you land when, you know, if you go to Newark Airport, and it really smells bad in Newark. And I thought this was perfect to represent the place I was in my marriage near the end of my marriage. This place we are at in our marriage. This place we are at in our marriage is like Newark. You have to land there, but it smells bad. Something is rotting. It's gray and smoky. You want to leave as soon as you arrive. This is a transition place between lovely suburban New Jersey towns and the exciting big city. You can see the tall buildings in the distance, but it's hard to enjoy anything while the toxic fumes assault your senses. No one told you about it, that to get to Broadway, to entertainment, theater, and gourmet food, you'd spend years in Newark limbo, lost, trying to figure out how to exit and arrive where you want to end up.
The Art of Departure is the name of volume of the poems written by Maureen Scherbondy. She's with me today. The name of that poem was This Place We Are At in Our Marriage. You did it. You wrote the poem about Newark. congratulations. You also wrote a poem about what happens after the divorce. You sort of get back into the dating pool.
Yes. This is very bizarre because I'm 51 years old. And the last time I was dating, I was hardly an adult. I was with my ex-husband my whole adult life. And we did not have cell phones and we did not have texting. We did not have online dating. So it's very hard to meet people at this age, I think after 40 probably. And so I started trying online dating and going to meetup events, and it's all very confusing and strange.
And you really did have 9 dates in 9 days, as the title says?
Yes, I did. So, you know, I thought of this as sort of how you would apply for a job. It's a numbers game. So I thought when I first started dating, I'm going to take this seriously and I'm going to sort of go through this process. It's almost like interviewing people. And it's very tiring.
Okay.
It is very tiring. So I'm going to read Accounting, 9 dates in 9 days. And this is all true.
Okay.
One, his mother was a paranoid schizophrenic. He is the 7th of 7 children and raised by his siblings. When his mother told him information, his father took it back by saying, "Don't listen to her, she's crazy." He says that you remind him of his older sister. 2. Restaurant clatter, tunnels, and silence, and you recognize the signs of the pre-faint. Your date's mouth moves, but you hear no words. About to pass out, you stare at your water and wonder if he drugged you or if you are reacting to too much MSG in the Kung Pao chicken. He takes your pulse and you manage to remain upright and conscious. You call a friend on the way home to talk you through the drive. You didn't like him anyway. 3. He drives all the way from Jacksonville, over 2 hours. Smart Navy pharmacist guy who sounds smart and funny on the phone, but at the table at Ragazzi's, he reminds you of your tactless uncle when he flosses his teeth right there in front of you. "Really?" you exclaim. You box up your leftovers and feed them to your dog. 4. He's short, really short. He lied about his stature. 2 inches shorter than his profile said. Did he really think you wouldn't notice? This leads to a short date. 5. He seems okay and hugs you goodnight, praises your beauty in the parking lot of the mall after buying you dinner. He asks why you haven't been scooped up yet. You shrug. You don't want to admit you've just been dumped. He begs you to go out again, then goes silent. A week later, his photo appears on the dating site beside a different name, WTF. 6. You can't see past his really crooked yellow teeth. 2 are missing. His parents must have been poor or negligent. You stare at absence and don't hear a thing he says. 7. He's dull but tall and has a nice face. But by the end of an hour, you are so bored that you want to run away. No wonder his wife left him. 8. He talks ad nauseum about running a half marathon, about the details of running trails, about every single run he's taken in a year. He asks you why you don't run. You try, tactfully as you can, to tell him your giant boobs would hurt. He doesn't seem to understand. When he shows you his tattoo he got related to running, you lose interest. You hate tattoos on middle-aged men. What are they trying to prove? 9. You can't see beyond his blonde toupee. It reminds you of dolls. Exhaustion sets in. Yes, you ate 9 free meals, but now pieces of you are vanishing. You think you will be alone forever.
Maureen Shirbandi reading from her latest collection of poetry, The Art of Departure, that one called Accounting, 9 Dates in 9 Days. It's a lovely poem in that it has a kind of, you know, in The New Yorker, the shouts and murmurs effect. I mean, but then there's this kind of great moment when it does something else. Pieces of you are vanishing. And you think about the difference between being in a relationship, even a bad one, where you're sort of connected in ethereal ways, and then this commodified, right? I mean, it's like, well, how big are his teeth and how old is his mother? It just changes everything in romance, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's... it's bizarre. It's been a very surreal experience. Yeah. That's all I have to say.
It's a real insight into the difference between sort of growing with someone and then trying to actually make connection with a perfect stranger.
Right. Yeah. And at 50 and up, people have so much baggage.
Yeah.
And it's really a question of what are you willing to accept?
Yeah. No, it really, it pays to be stupid when you fall in love.
Yeah.
Because the more you know, the harder it gets. You know, the notion of stones as an image appear several times in these poems. Mm-hmm. What about the role of stones in these poetry?
Well, the first poem in the book, Meditation on Leaving, ends with me placing stones on my father's grave and then the stones ending up in my own pocket. And stones, it's a Jewish ritual. So there are various meanings to this. One is that they're a symbolic remembrance. So it's more of a pagan ritual to leave flowers on a grave. So Jewish people don't do that, and I'm Jewish. Rabbi Weintraub, he said that the pebble is soror. I'm not sure if I'm saying it right. T-Z-R-O-R, which is a Jewish word that means bond. And he said that we ask that the deceased be bound up in the bond of life. And that's his interpretation of it. But it's a nice little ritual to leave a stone on someone's grave when you visit.
Yeah, some form of permanence in an otherwise sort of vanished relationship.
Yeah.
Well, Maureen, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Maureen Scherbondy, her latest volume called The Art of Departure. She's going to be reading from that collection at McIntyre's Books in Pittsburgh on January 24th, 2 o'clock. You can find out more information at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, Charlie Shelton, and Andrew Tai. Robin Copley's our technical director, Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.